esto de lunes a jueves. You
are the Safari Park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name, buried in cheers and applause? I think not. So it's nutty how we now have all this talk about alternate realities. How Musk and deGrasse Tyson think we're probably living in a computer simulation a la The Matrix. As I often say, there are no mysteries, or at least damn few. The guys who wrote The Matrix, Larry and Andy Wachowski, are now Lana and Lily Wachowski. So clearly, when they wrote The Matrix, they were living in an alternate reality of their own. Two guys, two brothers who very much wanted to be sisters. So writing The Matrix probably was not much of a stretch for them. There's nothing new about alternate realities. People have been wondering about them forever. Guys into quantum mechanics and hadron colliders and so on seem pretty certain there are multiple universes existing simultaneously, such as one explanation for ghosts and aliens, beings or entities that merely slip from one parallel universe to the other. But aside from the supernatural or the preternatural, all sorts of people create their own realities, don't they? Trekkies and furries and steampunks and Star Wars and on it goes. And each group has its orthodoxy of what constitutes entry into their reality. Just the right blend of polyfoam and velvet, the right length of claws, etc. And the normies, the corporados say, they look down their noses at the cosplayers and laugh at their rigid adherence to their codes of apparel. Yet those executones have to have just the right alligator golf shirts and club memberships and suburban address and trophy wife and private schools for the kiddies, and it's all very similar and homogenized, and the only real difference between the corporados and the furries is the pay grade. But they are both, in their own ways, living in their own realities. And you get this all around the world. The population is not so much a collection of ethnicities or residents of cities. It's just one click after another. Foodies and fatties and techies and gamers and sailors and hikers and farmers and gun guys and gun haters and on and on. And you've got to wonder, with so many millions just immersed, marinated like rice and soy sauce, if anybody, anywhere, actually has anything approaching a clear an objective view of anything. And allegedly brilliant guys like Musk or Tyson can be just as gullible and confused as anyone. Isaac Newton is certainly up there in the pantheon of clear-eyed thinkers, yet he was certain of the existence of the elusive philosopher's stone that would turn pig iron into gold or silver and cure any disease, as well as imbue the user with immortality. Newton's been dead for 300 years, but crystal healing still has quite a few fans, doesn't it? And so each generation has its whiz kids and geniuses, yet succeeding generations often learn these guys can be blindingly brilliant in one regard and gibbering imbeciles in another. And everyone seems to think the latest and the greatest is the smartest. But is it? Do human beings have any more intellectual firepower now than our ancestors from, say, ancient Greece? It's doubtful. What we do have is a continuously expanding knowledge base, which leads to more and faster discoveries, but the gray matter between our ears is likely the same as it ever was. And even the wisest men and women will continue to do and say stupid things like, "We're living in a computer simulation." Sorry, Neil and Elon, that's just stupid. But what would really light the jets on the intelligence of our species? People have been trying to increase our neural wattage since we crawled out of the caves. They've been trying drugs forever, from peyote to LSD and now nootropics, right, or so-called smart drugs, Adderall and modafinil, and now in Silicon Valley they're back to acid, but in microdoses, which they claim enhances cognitive performance without hallucinations. But all of them claim to be merely performance enhancers. Do they actually make you smarter? No, just more awake, or maybe increase your ability to concentrate. Pointy chicks make us more awake and definitely enhance our ability to concentrate on them. But eventually they do make us do stupid things. What all these guys really want is the Krell brain boost from the movie Forbidden Planet. True cinematic sci-fi aficionados know about the Krell brain boost. The Krell was an extinct race of geniuses who inhabited the planet Altair 4, where their outsized brains enabled them to build a machine so powerful it could create anything their minds desired, transforming thought into matter. Pretty godlike. Or maybe kind of a wireless 3D printer. And the Krell had a gizmo that could not just enhance mental performance, but capacity. The flick was the Rosetta Stone for all sci-fi, and everybody, Lucas, Roddenberry, etc., borrowed heavily from it. Star Trek swiped their uniforms and phaser guns. Star Wars stole their architecture. If you haven't checked it out, you'll see. So barring the Krell brain boost, how could we possibly increase our intelligence? Our limitations are our perspective and our perceptions. None of us has ever gotten more than 239,000 miles from this spinning ball. And perception-wise, we see a mere 0.0035% of the electromagnetic spectrum. We do better with sound-wise, but there are worlds we cannot see or hear. And then how often do we simply tune out and narrow our perceptions to gunslits? Probably most of the time. So not too long ago, I swing by the supermarket for some groceries, and it was early afternoon, not very crowded. And there, in the middle of the produce department, is a chick in a wedding dress. Not just any wedding dress. This thing had a skirt, a hoop skirt, I guess it's called, that must have been 6, maybe 8 feet in diameter. And the dress is snow white with a lot of sparkles on it. The only way she could have been more conspicuous would have been the addition of a strobe light and police siren on her head. She wasn't pointy, but she wasn't bad either. Dark hair and eyes, big smile, and as I walk by, pushing my as-yet-empty shopping cart, she smiles and says hello. And I'm thinking, well, they're always shooting TV shows around here. She probably just left the set in costume to pick up some Granny Smiths or something. So after I say hello, she says, "I'm Brenda the Bride." Well, of course she was. And she asks me if I'm married. And I tell her I am and ask where her husband is. And she tells me she's searching for one. And could I help her find one? So now I'm looking around for Ashton and the punked camera crew. And they're either hiding in the acoustic ceilings or in the cantaloupes because there's nobody around but Brenda and me. So I ask her, what's the problem? She's an attractive woman. Should be guys lining up for her. And she tells me every guy she meets is either married or gay or broke or a druggie or a phony. And I say, well, if you don't like those guys, you better leave Los Angeles. So she laughs but says, seriously, I need help. Now I'm still opti-scanning the store for a film crew and seeing nothing but Brenda and the sequins blinging off her wedding gown. I see a few other shoppers walk by, and I try to determine if maybe they know something I don't, but they cruise by Brenda as if she's invisible. So I suggest that Brenda relocate to somewhere more conventional than Los Angeles, but she says that's not possible for many reasons. So she says, really, do you know any nice single guys you could introduce me to? And I tell her most of the people I know are pretty awful, and she laughs and swats my arm, so now I know she's not a talking hologram. And then she goes, come on, help a girl out here. What's your name? So I tell her Larry, and she says she's got a cousin Larry, and he's a cool dude, and I ask her if cousin Larry has any nice single friends she could meet. But she tells me cousin Larry lives in Ohio. And she insists I give her some ideas, some direction on how or where she should look for a suitable husband. And I go, okay, just go where other women are not, like Home Depot, a shooting range, a classic car show. I suggest a place nearby where one night a week hundreds of guys congregate on exotic racing motorcycles. They're not outlaw biker types. Lots of them are doctors and lawyers and execs. And I can see Brenda is listening to me, really listening closely, like taking notes with her mind. And I still see no camera crew. And finally, I ask Brenda if she's in costume for a movie or a TV shoot. And she says no. She just wants to find a husband. And she figures if she wears a wedding gown, it will make her intentions clear right up front. So I've got to be somewhere, and I wish Brenda well and quickly grab my three or four items and slide into the 15 items or less express lane. And I say to the cashier, so is this the first bride you've had in the produce department? And she says, excuse me? And I say, I just spent 10 minutes talking with a woman in a huge bridal gown right over there. And she looks over her shoulder and back at me like I just told her there's a giraffe in the store. But she sees me all the time and knows I'm not some nut, and she asks her coworker a few check stands closer to the produce department if he saw the bride, and now he shrugs. And this is beginning to bug me. So I take my items and quickly walk past all the aisles, scan them to see if Brenda has migrated maybe from produce to dairy or something, but there's no sign of her. I stop two or three other store employees whom I don't know by name, but they know my face, and we usually say hi, the deli lady, the bakery guy, and the fish and meat guy. And I ask them all if they've seen the bride, and they go, what? And I try to cover by saying, oh, it must have been somebody in costume from a TV show. So now I'm wondering if somehow, some way, I've ingested some hallucinogenic drug. And the only substance I've ever knowingly taken that caused a hallucination was cheap tequila, and that was many years ago. So I throw my stuff in the car and figure there must be a shoot around here, because even when it's a shoot for a small cable show, the amount of trucks loaded with gear is incredible, and there's nowhere to hide that crap, so I drive in concentric circles in search of this set that Brenda surely must have been working on. Nothing. How is this possible? It wasn't peak shopping hour, but I'll bet that between staff and customers, there were at least 50 people in that store. And I know I saw several walk past as I spoke with Brenda, the bride. And how the fuck is it possible that only I saw her? I'm really not into hocus pocus and conspiracy theories, but after my Brenda experience, I can see how things like the second shooter at the Kennedy assassination could make sense, even though in a big crowd, no one saw anything. The first time I visited Dallas, I made damn sure I cruised Dealey Plaza several times in my rent-a-car. And by then, I'd already been an experienced shooter. Pistols, some rifles, and lots of shotguns. And each time I circled the site of the assassination, the second shooter grassy knoll theory made more and more sense. I don't give a shit that Oswald achieved marksman status in the U.S. Marine Corps. Only Jesus might have made those shots. And that's still a big might. Now, with most of us carrying our own distractions, smartphones and texting while driving and walking and bathing, we disconnect more and more from our own surroundings. An alternate electronic universe, if you will, limited only by Wi-Fi repeaters and battery life. And of course, there's the Orwellian all-seeing alternate universe of ubiquitous security cameras. If we live in any urban setting, we're recorded dozens, sometimes hundreds of times each day. And no one is any less likely of being a crime victim thanks to all these fucking cameras. You're just more likely to become a famous crime victim when the video is posted on YouTube. And of course, this very medium which brings us together right now is, without question, the largest and ever-growing alternate universe where we can be who and whatever we decide to be, until we step out of line and then discover there really are no secrets, even in the so-called dark web. Just ask Russ Ulbricht, the creator of Silk Road, now doing life without parole in some federal hellhole in Colorado. And for all those obsessed with ghosts and things that go bump in the night, those who whistle past the graveyard and fear the great beyond, we're never more immersed in the spirit world than when surrounded by our 2 billion Facebook users. Because around 20,000 of them die every day, and their pages just live on. Each year I get these idiotic wish-so-and-so-a-happy-birthday notices about friends who had their final birthdays several years ago. I wonder if Zuckerberg factors all those stiffs into his advertising rates. So why was I seemingly the only witness of Brenda the husband-hunting bride? For a while I ascribed it not to some hypersensitivity or awareness on my part. I missed just as much of the obvious as anyone else. But I laid it off on my New York upbringing. It's a lot, and I mean a lot easier to get dead in New York than L.A., or at least it was when I was growing up there. And so New Yorkers were unquestionably more wary and alert than people from smaller towns. They just had to be. And as vast as L.A. is, it's basically a bunch of neighborhoods trying to become a city. In New York, every time you turned around, somebody was trying to hustle you or con you or pick your pocket or rip you off. In L.A., where everyone lives in their cars, you simply aren't exposed to the predators the way you are in a pedestrian city like New York. And speaking of pedestrians, the rate of pedestrian vehicular death in New York is actually lower than that of L.A. And if the experts haven't figured it out, I can tell them exactly why. In New York, it's drilled into school kids not to cross in the middle of the block and to always look both ways, regardless of traffic signals. Traffic lights mean jack shit. So New York kids are taught, watch your own ass because cars will kill you. But in L.A., nearly the entire city lives in a sick, fucked, alternative fantasy world that flesh and blood pedestrians have the right of way at all times, and therefore are impervious to bodily harm. But the texting drunk or careless driver's 4,000-pound automobile doesn't know about pedestrian rights. And so you see these imbeciles, and I do mean nitwits, marching into traffic on Wilshire or Sunset or Ventura Boulevard, swinging their arms with an attitude of righteous invulnerability, as if they're surrounded by that impenetrable force field like Violet in The Incredibles, secure in their own moronic conviction that because they have the right of way, they are safe. And when their mangled corpses are scraped from the asphalt, and the hair and flesh from their righteous faces is plucked from the ball joints and tie rods of some soccer mom's Honda Odyssey who was texting her manicurist, I wonder if, at the moment of impact, they emerged from their alternate reality and thought, I have the right of way, but I'm still dead. In New York, I was on my way to a lunch with a client who subsequently became a girlfriend, the impossibly pointy Rashmi. Oh, she was an absolutely stunning girl of Indian heritage. The restaurant was on Lower Third Avenue, and maybe it was a Friday before a 3-day weekend because the city was weirdly deserted. And as I said earlier, in New York, traffic signals really don't apply to pedestrians. You cross the street when you know you won't get hit. So I'm heading across Third Avenue in my own alternate reality. And at that moment, that reality was lunch with ravishing Rashmi. And I looked north on Third Avenue to see a solitary city bus coming my way. Now, when a moving object crosses our field of vision, it's easy to estimate speed, but when it's moving toward or away from us, it's much harder. And strangely, there were no other vehicles near the bus, making it even tougher to judge speed. But I figured I could easily beat it and quickly started across the street. In the middle of the avenue, I again looked north and realized that bus was really, really moving fast, and I sprinted, actually jumped, across the street. And as I got to the sidewalk, I was kind of pissed that the bus was speeding like that, so I turned around to look at it at the exact moment it plowed into two guys. I never knew they were behind me because I was in the Rashmi zone of alternate reality. The bus hit both guys, and instead of being flattened, their bodies flew vertically, their feet off the ground, like the way people flew around in that Dune movie. And these guys flew standing up for quite a distance that way, maybe like a third of a block, and then fell to the pavement. The bus driver never applied his brakes before impact, so who knows what his alternate reality was. But I do recall seeing him punch the steering wheel in fury, and I tried to imagine the thought bubble over his head.
Now I'm going to be home late for dinner.
Or,
shit, now I have to file 2 fatality reports.
He didn't even get out of the bus to help the 2 guys he just airmailed off his front bumper. Pretty soon there was a small group around the victims, and an ambulance was on its way. It was a weird and ugly and disturbing scene to see. There was nothing I could do, so I continued on to my lunch date with Rashmi. I wondered if I'd have an appetite after what I'd just seen. I stepped inside the restaurant. It was a cozy little French place I liked. I saw ravishing Rashmi. What bus fatality? Another alternate reality enveloped me. Hey, thanks for hanging with me again at the dojo. It's always great to be with you. I'm slated to sit in again on the Fantastic Dick Show with the inimitable Dick Masterson and Sean and God knows whoever might ooze into his mountainside bunker. And what might I be bringing to the party besides moi? I have that tortilla bag with whatever the hell foreign matter is inside it for all dickheads to view, so do not miss it. And there's a really kick-ass mini-sode posting tomorrow. That's right, tomorrow. It's number 2 in the new series, Life Hacks from the Dojo. Have you got a toxic stepmother or father? Maybe an in-law you'd like to strangle? This episode will help you deal with the asshole relative that's driving you nuts and keep you out of jail. It's only available on Patreon, so check it out tomorrow at patreon.com/thatlarryshow. Email us your personal demons at thatlarryshow@gmail.com or let us hear your voice at 302-71-LARRY. We've probably got a sensei at the dojo who can help you kick ass. And so, my friends, as you cross the boulevards of your own alternate reality, wherever and whenever it may be, always look both ways and be certain you can outrun whatever's coming at you. Unless, of course, you want to wind up as the button story on some guy's podcast. I'll see you tomorrow on patreon.com/thatlarryshow. And until then, take no shit.